Thank you very much. My name is Tully Alexander. I'm from Texas A&M University. Cowpea is or black-eyed peas in the United States, is a crop of worldwide significance. It's mainly grown in Western Africa, led by Nigeria, which produces 1.7 million tons on 4 million hectares per year. But it's also produced in India, Brazil, and the southern United States. In West Africa, cowpea is a very important crop. All parts of the plant are used. The grain is reserved for human nutrition, and the fodder is safe for animal food. Cowpea is a very early maturing legume crop with improved varieties that will mature in 55 days after planting. Cowpea is typically grown in intercrop systems with maize and sorghum in West Africa. And through biological nitrogen fixation, cowpea can add valuable nitrogen back to the soil. This is a picture of a typical local variety. It's very low, crawling, and prostrate. It typically have very low yield potential with 100 to 300 kilograms of grain yield per hectare. And with improved varieties and techniques, we have up to 1,000 or more kilograms per hectare of grain yield per year. So soils in West Africa typically are very poor and deficient in many nutrients, especially particularly low in phosphorus. So as cowpea can fix its own nitrogen, phosphorus deficiency is a major constraint to cultivation of cowpea in West Africa. So rock phosphate is a lowly, poorly soluble calcium phosphate amendment available to farmers in West Africa. But it's the bound phosphate is typically very low solubility, and so it's not very plant available. So at IITA in Nigeria, they did a lot of research on screening for high biological nitrogen fixation and high P acquisition from rock phosphate and low phosphorus tolerance. And so as you can see in this photo, you can see a local variety and an improved variety, and the improved variety has an obvious yield advantage in low phosphorus situations. At IITA, they also developed a pot screening method where they could screen, instead of in the field, they could screen in greenhouse genotypes for low P tolerance. The control here, they've added no extra phosphorus. The rock phosphates, they've added a rock phosphate, and then they've added a soluble phosphate. And so, as you can see, the variety Danila, it does not do very well in control or with rock phosphate, and does very well with a normal phosphate treatment. But other varieties, such as 98K476-8, do very well when we add phosphorus, but still perform acceptably in low phosphorus treatments. So, the current project is one experiment that's part of a much larger project funded by the McKnight Foundation. And our primary objective was to identify genetic differences for varieties that are able to perform well in low phosphorus soil and to do well with the acquisition of added rock phosphate to low phosphorus soils. And our main goal is to develop cowpea varieties that can yield well and produce food in low phosphorus conditions. So in our experiment, we traveled to Nacogdoches, Texas to harvest, to collect soil. And the soil there is a sandy soil with very low available phosphorus. And so we used the same pot screening method developed at IITA. We used five phosphorus treatments, one a low P phosphorus where we didn't add any phosphorus to the pots. Three rock phosphate treatments were added 200, 400, and 600 milligrams per kilogram of rock phosphate, which is equivalent to 200, 400, 600 kilograms per hectare of rock phosphate, respectively. And 400 kilograms of rock phosphate per hectare is a common recommended amount of rock phosphate that would be added in farmers' fields in West Africa. And then for comparison, we used a normal phosphorus control, which is a soluble phosphate solution equivalent to 600 milligrams per kilogram from rock phosphate. In our experiment, 12 genotypes were used, 5 common American genotypes, and then 7 genotypes from IITA. 3 genotypes from IITA were previously used in the IITA screening experiments, so we added those for control. And then we included some other popular high-yielding varieties from the United States. So in our experiment, we used the pot screening method. We added 1,000 grams of soil per pot. We planted 3 seeds per pot and thinned to 1 plant shortly after germination. Our experiment was a completely randomized design with 3 replications, 5 treatments, 12 genotypes for 180 individuals. Uh, our our experiment was terminated 42 days after planting, at which time the plants were harvested by submerging the pots into a tub of DI water so that the majority of the soil would melt away. And then we went through three successive treatments of washing in DI water to remove any excess soil residue, at which time plants were drying and weighed. So here's a table with the means. I understand it's a lot of data to take in, but I guess the most important thing is if you look at the normal treatment, most lines average about 1 gram dry mass. So there's not much variance in these lines. But when you look at NOP, and this graph is ranked based on NOP performance, the performance in NOP is very, very variable. And so we have some lines that do very well in NOP, and then some lines that do very poorly with no added phosphate. And so this table, we removed some of the less important genotypes, so we're showing the top three and the bottom three. And if you see the top three lines, there's not much growth response as we add phosphate. So there's not much difference, irrespective of phosphorus treatment. But in the low P treatments, the poor performing lines, they do very poorly in low P, and there's a strong response as we add more phosphorus. So this graph is a visual representation of the previous chart. And so you see our three top performing lines, there's not much response as we add phosphorus. And then the three lowest performing lines, we have a very steep response as we add phosphorus to the pot. So I broke it out. So these are the highest performing lines and the poorest performing lines. And you can see the strong response as we increase phosphate. And these lines also had a significant response to rock phosphate addition. So as we add rock phosphate, these lines significantly increase biomass as we add rock phosphate addition. So this is some photos of one of our high-performing lines and our poor-performing lines. And as you can see in the poor-performing line, in the no-P, the treatment here on the left, the plant did very, very poorly, lost, there was defoliation. But as we added rock phosphate, the plant looked, it grew very well. And then this line, IT97K476-8, it grew pretty well, irrespective of phosphorus treatment. And so the three photos on the left are lines that did very well, irrespective of phosphorus treatment. And the three photos on the right are lines that were the lowest performing lines. And as you can see in the no-P treatment here on the left, they do very poorly. And then as we increase phosphorus, they approach growing very well. So in conclusion, we did find significant genetic difference when we compare biomass grown under no-P and added rock phosphate. The cowpea varieties Big John, TX2028-1310, and 98K476-8 were the top performers in our experiment. Danila, 1092, IR48, and Golden Eye Cream were the poorest performers in our experiment. And so, based on the data and results, studies of inheritance of the trait and the mechanism for low phosphorus tolerance, as well as rock phosphate acquisition, are underway. And these best lines, they've been included in our breeding program. So we're including that germplasm now in our breeding program. So based on the data, we took lines and we put them into three categories. We designated lines that low P tolerant that are significantly better in low phosphorus than the rest of the lines. We have Big John, 98K476, and 2028. And we have lines that are rock phosphorus responsive, California Black Eye 50, IT00KLM48, Danila, and IAR48. And then the worst performing lines, which do very poorly in low phosphorus, is California Black Eye 46, CB50, Aloka, 1069, 1148, Golden Eye Cream, IA48, and 1092-1 were the poorest performing lines. So I would like to thank my advisor, Dr. B.B. Singh, Dr. Sabiu Mahamne, Dirk Hayes, Richard Leppert. I would like to thank graduate students that helped me, Dr. Julie Roth, David Rebray, and our undergrad help, Matthew Weintraub. And I'd also like to thank the McKnight Foundation for funding our project and Texas AgriLife Research for funding my position. So, okay. Thank you. Any questions?
And we do have time for a few questions.
Yes, so we took dried shoot and root samples, and we sent them off for tissue analysis. And so we have that data, but it's preliminary, and so we haven't. But just as a quick look at it, the lines, the best performing lines, so our top three lines, they tend to have the lowest phosphorus concentration in dry mass, but they have the highest absolute phosphorus amount in dry mass. So they tend to correlate with very low phosphorus concentration but high phosphorus amount. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
The high performing lines of the low
So right now we're doing more studies into the mechanism on how they do well. Is it, can they access very tightly bound phosphorus, or are they just efficient in their use of phosphorus? So right now, so we've just identified genotypes that do well under low phosphorus, and we're currently studying the mechanism of that phosphorus tolerance. Absolutely.
This is a follow-up question. Are there differences in phosphorus content of seeds?
Yes. So that's another study that we're taking right now. There is some correlation between seed size and seed size with the performance, as well as seed phosphorus concentration for performance. And so another one's presenting on an experiment in which we remove the cotyledons to see, shortly after planting, remove the cotyledons to try to take away the effect of seed phosphorus to determine how the plants grow. So absolutely.
Any other questions?
Dr. Singh.
I just wanted to add on this, where phosphorus is coming and the seed phosphorus content. If we look at the seed phosphorus content and seed size, that helps the seedling stay. But if we terminate and let them grow up to 40, 50 days, then that effect is gone. That's a genotypic effect of getting phosphorus. And some of these lines, we, as I pointed out, we want to know where it is coming from, but there is a lot of bound phosphorus, which some of these genotypes are able to mineralize by some disease and so on. So those are the studies that we are following up.
Okay, one more question. I think of Derkase as a gene mapper, and I'm sorry if I missed something, but is mapping the trait now on the agenda?
So, absolutely. So now that we've identified genotypes that are high and low, now we're making crosses. We have crossing blocks, and so that's exactly. So his students are working in mapping these traits. Absolutely.